The inside of the building was stifling hot. Wooden catwalks surrounded a mammoth central chimney 15 paces in diameter. It was made of broad sheets of metal riveted together and supported by an external wooden frame. The chimney descended at least 4 stories into the ground to meet the natural crack in the earth's crust. Looking into the shadowed depths of the crack, Kyler understood why people called this a marvel. The men who worked here not only harnessed the power of the hot air that blew out of the earth itself, they also kept the Plith River from spilling into the earth. If that happened, the river would boil, the fish would die, the fishermen would be wiped out, and Sonaria would lose its major source of food. Kyler crossed a long catwalk, took a few turns, and found himself at a crossroads where he could go to a door below ground level or go up to a maintenance door by the outlet of the chimney on the north side of the building, where Roth would be. He went down. The door was set beside double doors used for bringing in huge pieces of equipment. Kyler eased it open a crack. A young witch was standing outside, her hair pulled back and veer-marked arms folded. She was looking up a long stone ramp. Someone was talking to her, but Kyler couldn't see the other person. Beyond her were a dozen others, dressed similarly. Kyler eased the door shut. He went back to the other branch of the catwalk and opened the door set into the horizontal section of the chimney. Bent sideways, the chimney was more like a steam tunnel here. It was 15 paces across until it pinched down to 4 paces at the last fan. The floor was sheet metal reinforced underneath, so the workers could stand inside it as they worked on either the massive fan set just before the chimney turned straight down, or the much smaller last fan before the hot air escaped into the Sonarian night. The northern fan spun slowly enough that Kyler would be able to see Roth through it. He stepped inside carefully, testing the floor to see if it would squeak as he put his weight on it. It didn't. But even before Kyler closed the door behind himself, he had a vaguely uneasy feeling. Cooled from its long journey up the metal chimney, sulfuric smoke poured sluggishly through the tunnel into the night air outside. Heavy smoke filled the bottom third of the tunnel, curling and rolling. The only light came from the moon outside, but was filtered through the spinning fan. Between the dense smoke and the dancing shadows, Kyler's vision was no better than any other man's.
There's someone here.
Durzo's heart had just leapt out that goddamn window. He walked to the window and watched until he saw Kyler's surface.
Amazing. In all my years, I never tried anything so dumb. And here he does it on his first day, and it works.
Kyler clambered onto shore and began working his way north. Durzo knew where he was headed, the stubborn fool. He'd always had that streak. From the time he'd refused to accept that he'd failed in Rat's murder and had gone and killed the Twist in the next 3 hours. Kyler did what he thought was right, and to hell with the consequences. To hell with what anyone thought, even Durzo. He reminded Durzo of Jorsen Alkestis. Kyler had chosen to give his loyalty to Durzo, had clung to it despite Durzo. He'd put faith in Durzo Blint as Jorsen had put faith in him. Kyler was just a damned kid, but he'd also put his faith in a much worse man than a Kalis Thorn. The pain resonated along every string in Durzo Blint's life. He'd been 1,000 kinds of fraud in his years, so everyone who had believed in him during his deceptions could be written off. But Jorsen had known him. Kyler had known him. Not for the first time in 7 centuries, existence ached. All the world was salt, and Durzo Blint was an open wound.
Where did I go wrong?
He moved, because like every man Akalis Thorn had been, Durzo Blint was a man of action. His talent puddled around his hands and feet. Funny that it still worked like that, despite losing the Kakari. And he stepped out of the window. He didn't fall. The magic around his feet gripped the stone, and he pitched forward, catching himself with his hands so that he hung face down on the castle wall like an insect. Kyler hadn't learned all of Durzo's tricks. Hell, he hadn't even seen all of Durzo's tricks. He knew where Kyler was headed, and he knew how to get there faster than Kyler could, so he was in no hurry. The clash of arms in the courtyard attracted his attention. He cloaked himself in shadows and crawled down to the courtyard. The battle was deadly. 200 Cenarian guardsmen and the 40 or more useless nobles with them couldn't budge the 100 Caladorans who were blocking the gate to East Kingsbridge. The Caladorans had half a dozen maesters with them, but this late in the battle, they weren't doing much except psychologically. They'd used pretty much as much magic as they were able to. With eyes long honed in battle and the arts of assassination, Durzo picked out the cornerstone for the battle. Sometimes that was simple. Officers were usually important. Meisters always were, but sometimes there were simple soldiers in the lines who were strength for the men around them. If you killed the cornerstones, the whole battle would shift. On the Caladoran side, the cornerstones were two officers and three of the Meisters and one giant of a Highlander. On the Cenarian side, there were only two, a sergeant with an Alateran longbow and Terra Grayson. The sergeant was a simple soldier, probably in his first battle despite his age, and Durzo knew the look on his face. He was a man who had joined the military to find his measure and had finally found it in battle. He had passed his own crucible and approved of himself. It was a potent thing, that approval, and every man around the sergeant felt it. Terra Grayson, of course, would have stood out in any crowd. She was all tits and haughtiness, a vision in a torn cerulean gown. She believed no harm would dare step into her presence. She believed everyone around her would obey her, and the men felt that too.
Sergeant Gamble!
The sergeant loosed another arrow, killing a Meister, but not one of the important ones. Count Drake emerged from the front gate and grabbed the sergeant.
Another 100 Highlanders on their way!
The sight of the Count packed the wound Kyler had opened with more salt. Durzo had thought the Count was staying home, but here he was, still ill from Durzo's poison, about to die with all the rest.
Damn it!
Durzo turned away from them. The Cenarians would be slaughtered. It was out of his hands. He had his own date with judgment.
Night Angel! If you fight with us still, fight now! Night Angel! Come!
Durzo froze. He could only guess Kyler had already intervened in the castle somehow. Very well, Kyler. I'll do this for you, and the Count, and for Jorson, and for all the fools who believe that even a killer may accomplish some good.
Give me your bow.
Sergeant Gamble's head whipped around, and he and Count Drake looked at the shadow over the gate. The sergeant threw him his bow and a fresh quiver of arrows. Durzo caught the bow in his hand and the quiver with his talon. As he drew one arrow, he pulled another from the quiver with his talon. He squatted against the vertical face of the wall and in an instant locked his debtors into his mind's eye. The giant Highlander went down first, an arrow catching him between the eyes. Then the Meisters, every last one of them. Then the officers, then a wedge of the Highlanders directly in front of Bridge. Durzo emptied the quiver of 20 arrows in less than 10 seconds. It was, Durzo thought, some damn fine shooting. Durzo tossed the bow back to Sergeant Gamble, who didn't seem to comprehend yet what had happened. Count Drake was a different matter. He didn't even look at the courtyard as the Cenarian line surged forward into the gap. He wasn't surprised at the sudden hesitation in the Caladoran ranks that within seconds would turn into a rout. He was looking toward Durzo. Sergeant Gamble uttered an awed curse, but Count Drake's mouth opened to bestow a blessing. Durzo couldn't take it. He was already gone.
No more blessings. No more mercy. No more salt. No more light in my dark corners. Let this end. Please.
Fear flashed through Kyler. He dropped into the smoke. Kyler rolled and saw one knife sticking out of the door and one sticking through the sheet metal of the chimney.
So, you figured out that it will make you invisible, huh?
Durzo's voice came from somewhere in the darkness near the huge fan at the south end of the tunnel.
Damn it, Blint! I told you I don't want to fight!
Kyler scanned the darkness. Even if Durzo weren't fully invisible, in the smoke and flickering interplay of light and shadow, he might as well be.
That was quite a dive, boy. You trying to become a legend yourself?
Durzo was now by the smaller fan at the north end of the tunnel. He must have passed within a pace of Kyler to get there.
Who are you? You're a Kaelis Thorn, aren't you?
Kylar almost forgot to move. A knife sailed a hand's breadth from Kylar's stomach and pinged off the wall.
A Kaelis was a fool. He played the devil, and now I draw the devil's doom.
Master Blint, why don't you join me? Help me kill Roth. He's outside, isn't he?
Outside with a boatload of Meisters and Vordmeisters. It's over, Kylar. Kalador will hold the castle within an hour. More Highlanders arrive at dawn, and an army of Kaladoran regulars is already marching for the city. Anyone who could have led an army against them is dead or fled.
Warm air started blowing up from the depths. Kylar felt sickened. His work had been for nothing. A few soldiers killed, a few nobles saved. It hadn't changed anything. He padded over to the small north fan, which was now turning faster. Through its blades, he could see Roth conferring with the witches. Dirza was right. There were dozens of witches. Some were getting back into their boat, but at least a score were accompanying Roth, who also had a bodyguard of a dozen gigantic Highlanders.
Roth killed my best friend. I'm going to kill him. Tonight.
Then you'll have to go through me.
I won't fight you.
You've always wondered if you'd be able to beat me when it came down to it. I know you have. And you have your talent and the Kakari now. As a boy, you swore you wouldn't let anyone beat you. Not ever again. You said you wanted to be a killer. Have I made you one or not?
Damn you! I won't fight you! Who's a Kaelis?
The hand of the wicked shall rise against him, but it shall not prevail. Their blade shall be devoured. The swords of the unrighteous shall pierce him, but he shall not fall. He shall leap from the roofs of the world and smite princes. I never made it.
What are you talking about? What is that? Is that a prophecy?
That isn't me. Just like the Guardian of Light wasn't Jorzin. It's you, Kylar. You are the spirit of retribution, the Night Angel. You are the vengeance I deserve. Vengeance stems from a love of justice and a desire to redress wrongs. But revenge is damning. Three faces has the Night Angel. The avatar of retribution, vengeance, justice, mercy.
But I don't have anything to avenge. I owe you my life.
Yes, this life of blood. I served that goddamn Kakari for almost 700 years, Kylar. I served a dead king and a people who weren't worthy of him. I lived in the shadows and I became like the shadow dwellers. I gave all I was for some dream of hope that I never understood in the first place. What happens when you strip away all the masks a man wears and you find not a face beneath them, but nothing at all? I failed the Kakari once. Once I failed in 700 years of service, and it abandoned me. I didn't age a day, Kylar. Not a day for 700 years. Then came Guinevere and Vonda. I loved her, Kylar.
I know. I'm sorry about Vonda.
No, I didn't love Vonda. I wanted Guinevere to know how it felt to have someone you love sharing other people's beds. I fucked them both and I paid Guinevere, but it was Vonda I made a whore. That was why I wanted the silver Kakari at first, to give it to Guinevere, so she wouldn't die as everyone I've loved has died. But King Davin's rock was a fake, so I left it for Gareth Ursul's men to find. The only way to save Vonda would have been to give them my Kakari. I balanced her life against my power and my eternal life. I didn't love her, so the price was too high. I let her die. That was the day the Kakari stopped serving me. I began to age. The Kakari became nothing more than black paint on a sword that mocked me with the word justice. Justice was that I get old, lose my edge, and die. You were my only hope, Kylar. I knew you were a Kakarifer. You would call the Kakari to you. There were rumors that there was another in the kingdom. The black Kakari had rejected me, but maybe the silver would not. A slim hope, but a hope for another chance, for redemption, for life. But you only called my Kakari. You began to bond to it that day I beat you. The day you risked your life to save that girl. I was insane. You were taking from me the only thing I had left. Reputation gone, honor gone, excellence fading, friends dead. The woman I loved hating me. And then you took my hope. I wanted to end you, but I couldn't. I knew that first kill wasn't in you, not even that twist rat. I knew you couldn't kill someone for what he might do.
What?
The streets would have devoured you. I had to save you. Even if I knew it would come to this.
What are you saying?
No. God, please, no. Don't let it fit.
Rat didn't mutilate Doll Girl. I did.
Kyla couldn't move. Couldn't breathe. Couldn't even protest. It was a lie. It had to be a lie. He knew Rat. He'd seen his eyes. He'd seen the evil there. But he'd never seen Durzo's evil, had he?
No!
Blint would do it.
Life is empty. A street girl is worth exactly what she can get for whoring.
No!
It ends now, Kyla.
Durzo shimmered and disappeared, the darkness embracing him. Kyla felt rage. Stark, hot rage rushed through him. He wheeled and died. The smoke swirled as the shadowy wet boy ran past him. A shadow appeared, too close, too fast. They clashed, and Kyla's sword went flying. Kyla dove backward. Kyla came to his feet slowly, straining his senses, crouching low in the smoke. The rage overcame his fatigue, and he channeled it, forced it to bring clarity. He looked for any advantage, but there was little to be found. He could stand close to the huge southern fan, and it would protect his back, but Blint could easily knock him into the spinning blades. They weren't so sharp or turning so fast that they'd sever a limb, but they'd certainly stun him. In a fight against Durzo, that would mean death. Handholds were set into the walls and ceiling of the tunnel at intervals so the workers could replace sections. But where Kyla stood, the handholds were at least 10 feet over his head. A brief jolt of his talent coursed through him as he leapt. He found a rung in his grip. As his right hand flexed, he almost fell. He'd forgotten that the window had slashed his hand open. Kyla swung and looped his feet behind another rung to stabilize himself. His right hand was too weak to hold his weight, so he drew the tanto with that hand. Kyla looked at the tanto. It was straight, 8 inches long, and had an angled point for punching through armor. With his hand as weak as it was, he couldn't slash with this knife. He sheathed the tanto, popped the catch on a special sheath, then drew out a short, curving knife only half the size of the tanto. 4 tiny holes up the spine of the blade were stuffed with cotton. The sheath was wet. Kyla didn't know if the white asp poison had been washed off by the river or not, but he had no choice. Kyla held still and waited. The smoke was gradually drifting lower again, no longer filling the entire tunnel. The next time Durzo moved through the smoke, Kyla would be able to see the disturbance, even if he couldn't see the wet boy himself. Kyla was straining now, not just to see or hear the wet boy, but merely to hold himself in place and hold himself there silently. If Durzo heard him, Kyla was totally exposed. With his feet locked behind the rung, he wouldn't be able to move quickly, and he made a huge target. His only advantage would be surprise. But Durzo had taught him that that was the most important advantage of all. A minute passed. The smoke, cooling once more, settled back into its cradle along the bottom of the tunnel. Agonizingly slow, Kyler turned his head, careful that not even his collar rustled. Surely, with the smoke this low, drifting slowly as it did to the north, he should be able to see something, some eddy, some curl out of place. Dread grew in his heart as he hung there. How could he fight Durzo? How many men had his master killed? How many times had Durzo beaten him in every test, every challenge? How could Kyla fight now, injured and weak as he was? Durzo could wait on the bottom of the tunnel forever. He'd probably placed himself by the smaller north fan. With a light at his back, he'd see as soon as Kyla dropped and be on him in a second. Who was Kyla to kill a legend? He tried to still the racing of his heart. His throat was tight. The hot emotions that had fueled him throughout the night cooled. He was cold, empty. Durza was right. Justice had no place in this world. Logan was dead. Aline had been beaten, and the men who had done all the evil Kyla could imagine were winning. They always had. They always would. He couldn't hold on much longer. Durza would hear the sound of his heart, thudding as it was against his chest. Suddenly, Kyla paused. There was the slightest tang on the air. Garlic. Both master and apprentice had had the same thought. Durza was hanging exactly as Kyla was, mirror image, inches away, poised, watching the smoke for the slightest eddy. Kyla jerked his head up and lashed out with a little knife. He must have made a sound because the smear of darkness that had been just one rung above him was moving too. His knife cut cloth, and he blocked an attack with his other hand as they both dropped off the ceiling. Kyla rolled and jumped to his feet. Durza winked back into visibility. Kyla let himself become visible too. He was too tired to maintain invisibility for another second.
So it comes to this. I don't suppose you have any more tricks like that one up in the tower.
I don't even know how that happened. I've got nothing left.
Good thing I didn't let you go after Roth then, isn't it?
I don't see how it matters. I'd rather my blood was on his head than yours.
Kyla sheathed the dagger.
You used the asp venom, didn't you? Of course you did.
Durzo saluted Kyla and sheathed his sword. Then he sagged and had to grab onto a rung on the wall to keep from falling.
I always wondered how it really felt.
Durzo reached up to the gash in his tunic. Kyla had thought he'd only cut cloth, but Durzo's chest bled from a shallow cut.
Master!
I haven't worried about dying in a long time. It's not so bad. It's not so good either. Kyla, promise me something.
Anything.
Take care of my little girl. Save her. Mama Kay will know where they've got her.
I can't. I would, but I can't.
Kyla turned his head and pulled Durzo's dart out of his neck. At first, he thought the twinge in his neck was from hitting the ground, but as soon as he moved, he knew better. It was a poison dart. Kyla was dying too.
Lucky throw. Get me out of this tunnel. I'll have to smell brimstone soon enough.
Kyla pulled the two of them out of the door of the tunnel. He helped Durzo sit on the walkway and then sat across from him. Kyla was exhausted. Maybe the poison on the dart was King Snake venom with hemlock then.
You really love that Aline girl, don't you?
I do. I really do.
I should be dead by now.
The knife got wet.
Jorsen told me. 6 Kokari for 6 angels of light. But 1 Kokari stands watch in the night. The Black has chosen you, Kyla. You are the night angel now. Give these petty, ungrateful people better than they deserve. Give them hope. This is your master's peace. Kill Roth. For this city. For my daughter. For me. I'm sorry, son. Sorry for all of it. Someday, maybe you can forgive.
Durzo's eyes dipped drowsily, and he fought to open them, to stay focused. Durzo wasn't making sense. He knew Kyla was dying. It must have been the poison.
I do forgive you. May our deaths not be on each other's heads.
Durzo's eyes lit suddenly, and he seemed to rally against the poison in his veins. He smiled.
I didn't poison the dart. The letter.
Kyla closed Durzo's eyes. A hollow enormity swallowed his stomach. A cry was stuck somewhere inside him, lost in the dark emptiness in his throat. Kyla stood woodenly, Not taking enough care, the corpse slid from his lap. Its limbs were loose, graceless, lying in an uncomfortable position, unmoving, just like any corpse. In life, every man was unique. In death, every man was meat. Durzo was like any debtor. Numb, Kylo reached into the corpse's breast pocket and pulled out the letter Durzo had said was his inheritance. It was just under where Kylo had cut the wet boy's chest. The letter was soaked with blood. Whatever words had been scrawled on the paper were illegible. Whatever Durzo had meant to excuse, whatever he had meant to explain, whatever gift he had meant to give Kylo with his last words, died with him. Kylo was alone. Kylo dropped to his knees, all his strength gone. He took the dead wet boy in his arms. He stayed there for a long time. Dawn found Kylo stumbling through the streets to one of his safe houses. Before he'd finally left, he erected a cairn over Durzo's body on the northern tip of Voss Island. At that hour, no one had been in sight. Kylo had stolen a rowboat from the dock and let the current carry him to the Warrens, too exhausted to paddle. He docked at the shop where he'd killed Rat. It was still dark and inconspicuous, perfect for his kind of work. He wondered if Rat was still anchored in the muck, his unquiet spirit staring up at Kylo's little boat with the hatred and evil that had once lived in his adolescent heart. It was a morning for lonely meditations. Kylo disabled the traps on his door automatically and stumbled inside. Blint had been right. It would have been suicide to go after Roth last night. Kylo had been so exhausted he'd thought it was poison working on him. He probably wouldn't have made it through a single Meister. It might be worth it to trade life for life to rid the Earth of Roth Ur-Sul, but Kylo wasn't going to die for nothing. He locked the door, then stopped and turned back. He locked each of the three locks three times. Lock, unlock, lock.
For you, Master.
He took the pitcher of water and filled the basin with water and took the soap and began cleaning the blood from his hands. The face in the mirror was cold, calm as he washed the last vestiges of his master's life away. Blood marred the handle of the pitcher, just a little. Just a small, dark smear from the blood on his hands. Kylo snatched the pitcher up and hurled it through the mirror. Finally, he slept. When he woke, he felt better than he had any right to. He washed himself and felt refreshed. As he scraped off his stubble, he caught himself grinning in one of the shards of the mirror. Blint didn't mean to kill me at all, but he couldn't resist putting a dart in me just to show that he could.
The old bastard. The really old bastard.
It was Gallo's humor, but he needed whatever he could find. He got dressed and armed, thinking mournfully of the gear he'd lost last night. Daggers, poisons, grappling hooks, throwing knives, a tanto, poisoner's knife. He'd lost all of his favorites except for retribution. The streets were crowded in the late afternoon when Kylo finally emerged from his safe house. Rumors were flying about what had happened at the castle in the night. An army had appeared from thin air. An army had boiled up out of the Voss Island crack. An army of mages from the south had come. No, there were witches from the north. Highlanders had killed everyone in the castle. Kalidor was going to raise the entire city. Few of the rumor mongers seemed worried. Kylo saw a few people with their belongings loaded onto carts or wagons and heading out of the city, but there weren't many. No one else seemed to believe that anything bad could happen to them. Amake's hideout was still being guarded by the sinewy Karen pretending to fix the fence. Kylo didn't bother becoming invisible.
Hello, friend.
Kylo took the keys from the man's belt and opened the door. He locked it after himself and embraced the shadows. Invisible, he found Mama Kay in the study looking over reports from her brothels. He read them silently over her shoulder. She was trying to piece together what had happened at the castle. The needle sank into the sagging flesh at the back of her arm. She pulled the needle out, then turned her chair slowly, looking ancient.
Hello, Kyla. I expected you yesterday.
Kylo appeared in the other chair, a lounging young death.
How do you know it was me?
Durzo would have used a poison that would leave me in agony.
It's a tincture of Ariamu root and jacinth spore. The agony's coming.
A slow poison. So, you decided to give me time. What for, Kyla? To apologize? Oh, to cry? Oh, to beg?
To think. To remember. To regret.
So, this is retribution. There's a new young killer on the streets, doling out what old whores deserve.
Yes, and you deserve to lose the very thing that made you betray Durzo.
And what's that, oh wise one?
Control. And don't reach for the bell rope. I've got a hand crossbow, but it's not accurate. I might hit your hand rather than the rope.
Control. Is that what you call it? Do you know that rapes aren't spread out evenly, even among working girls? Some girls get raped again and again. Others never do. The ones who get raped are the victims. The rapist bastards can somehow tell. It's not control, Kyla. It's dignity. Do you know how much dignity a 14-year-old has when her pimp won't protect her? When I was 14, I was taken to a noble's house and enjoyed for 15 hours by him and his 10 closest friends. I had to make a choice after that, Kyla, and I chose dignity. So if you think giving me a poison that makes me shit myself to death is going to make me beg, you're sadly mistaken.
Why did you betray us?
Mama Kay's defiance slowly faded as Kyla sat there with a wet boy's patience. She didn't answer him for a minute. 5 minutes. He sat with all the patience of death. By now, he knew. She had to be feeling queasy.
I loved Durzo.
You what?
I've slept with hundreds of married men in my life, Kyla, so I never saw the most flattering portrait of marriage. But if he'd asked me, I would have married Durzo Blint. Durzo is... was. I suppose you killed him? Yes, I thought so. Durzo was a good man in his way. An honest man. I couldn't handle honesty. He told me too many unlovely truths about myself, and that hard, dark thing that lives in me couldn't bear the light. Oh. Besides, he never stopped loving Vonda, a woman utterly unworthy of him.
So you thought you'd kill him? What if he'd killed me?
He loved you like a son. Once you bonded the Kakari, he told me. A life for a life, he said. The divine economy, he called it. He knew then that he'd die for you, Kyla. Oh, he fought it sometimes. But Durzo was never as unprincipled as he wanted to believe. Besides, he changed when Vonda died. I warned him, Kyla. She was a lovely, careless girl. The kind of woman born without a heart, so she couldn't imagine breaking anyone else's. Durzo was exciting for her. He was nothing more than her rebellion. But she died before he ever saw through her. So she was always perfect in his sight. She was forever a saint. And I was always spit in beer.
He didn't love her.
Oh, I knew that. But Durzo didn't. For every other way that he was unique, Durzo thought excitement plus fucking is the same thing as love. Just like every other man. Ugh.
He told me he was trying to make you jealous. Make you feel how he felt when you were with other men. When she died, he thought you could never forgive him. Guinevere, he loved you.
Oh, why would he say such a thing? No, Kyla. Durzo was going to let his daughter die.
That's why you betrayed him?
I couldn't let her die, Kyla. Don't you understand? Yuli is Durzo's daughter. But she's not my niece.
Then who's her mother? No.
I couldn't keep her. I knew that. I always hated taking tansy tea, but that time I couldn't do it. I sat with the cup growing cold in my hands, telling myself something like this would happen. And I still couldn't drink. A shingo with a daughter. What more perfect target could there be? Everyone would know my weakness. Worse, everyone would see me as just another woman. I could never hold my power if that happened. So I left the city, had her in secret, and hid her away. But how could he let Yuli die? Even thinking she was Vonda's. How could he? Roth threatened him, but Durzo called his bluff. You don't know Roth. He would have done it. The only way I could save Yuli was for Durzo to die first. If Durzo was dead, Roth wouldn't have to carry out his threat. I had to choose between the man I've loved for 15 years and my daughter, Kyler. So, I chose my daughter. Durzo wanted to die anyway. And now, I do too. You can't take anything from me that I won't gladly give.
He didn't call their bluff.
Mama Kay couldn't seem to grasp it. Kyler could see the edifice of suppositions she'd built crash down brick by brick. A Durzo who let himself be blackmailed was a Durzo who cared for a daughter he'd never seen. A Durzo who could do that was a Durzo who could love. She'd hardened her heart against him because she thought he didn't care and couldn't. So for 15 years she'd been hiding her love for a man who had been hiding his love for her. That meant she'd betrayed the man who loved her. In pitting Kyler against Durzo, she'd killed the man who loved her.
No. No. No!
His dying wish was that I save her. He said you'd know where she is.
Oh, God!
As another spasm passed through Mama Kay, she seemed to welcome the pain. She wanted to die.
I'll save her, Mama Kay. But you need to tell me where she is.
She's in the maw. In the noble cells. With Aline.
With Aline? I have to go back.
Kyler got to the door, then turned and drew retribution. Mama Kay looked at him hollowly, still absorbing his words.
I used to wonder why Durzo called this retribution and not justice.
Kyler drew the Kakari off the sword and exposed the word mercy on the steel beneath it.
Or, if this was what was under justice, why not call it mercy? But now I know. You've shown me, Mama Kay. Sometimes people shouldn't get what they deserve. If there isn't more in the world than justice, it's all for nothing.
Kyler reached into his pouch and pulled out a tiny vial of the antidote. He set it on Mama Kay's desk.
That's mercy. But you will have to decide if you want to accept it. You've got half an hour. I hope you'll take it, Mama Kay. I'd miss you.
Kyler! Did he really say he loved me?
Her mouth was set, her face tight, her eyes hard, but tears rolled down her cheeks. It was the only time he'd ever see her cry. He nodded gently and left her then, her back bent, sunk on the cushions of her chair, cheeks wet, eyes fixed grimly on the bottle of life. Kyler hurried to the castle. Even going as fast as he could, he might be too late. The effects of the coup were being felt throughout the city. The Sakage's bashers had been among the first to figure out the most practical consequence of a coup. With no one to report to and no one to pay them, the city guards didn't work. No guards, no law. The corrupt guards who had worked for the Sakage for years were the first to start looting. After that, the looting spread like a plague. Caladoran Highlanders and Meisters were stationed on the Vanden Bridge and on the east bank of the Plith to keep the looting confined to the Warrens. Apparently, Calador's invasion leaders wanted the city intact, or at least they wanted to do the more profitable looting themselves. When he got to the east side, he stole a horse. He was thinking about the Night Angels. Flint had talked about them over the years, but Kyler had never paid any attention to them. He'd always thought them just another superstition, some last vestige of old dead gods. Then Kyler thought about how Aline would take it, even if he did rescue her. She was in jail because of him. She thought he'd killed the prince. She hated him. He tried to plan how he was going to kill Rolf, a man who would be guarded by Meisters, Caladoran Highlanders, and maybe the odd Sakage Basher. That didn't make Kyler feel any better. The more he thought, the worse he felt. He didn't even know if Meisters could see him when he was cloaked, but the only way he could test that had serious drawbacks. He had, however, finally used his head and taken a look at himself in a mirror to see if the Kakari was as effective as he thought. He'd been amazed. Wet boys bragged about being ghosts, about being invisible. But that was all it was. Braggadocio. No one was invisible. The only other wet boy Kyler had seen go stealthing looked like a big blob of an indeterminate something. Blint had looked like a 6-foot smear of mottled darkness, good enough for all practical purposes when the light was poor. And when Blint held still, he dwindled to a shadow of a shadow. But Kyler was invisible. All wet boys became more visible when they moved. When Kyler moved, there wasn't so much as a distortion in the air. It almost irritated him that he'd spent so much time learning to sneak without his talent. It seemed like wasted effort. Then he thought of having to sneak past the witches. Maybe the effort wasn't wasted after all. He rode up Sidelin Way to Horak Road, then veered around the Jadwin Estate, leaving his horse and cloaking himself with the Kakari. The sun was setting as he scouted East Kingsbridge. As he expected, the security was daunting. A score of Caladoran regulars were stationed in front of the gate. 2 Meisters paced among them. 2 more talked together on the other side of the gate. At least 4 boats patrolled Voss Island, going around it in measured circles. It was a good thing Kyler wasn't planning on getting into the castle. It was a good thing he'd come with a small arsenal. Dodging from rock to rock, tree to shrub, Kyler moved to the bridge. He unlimbered the heavy crossbow from his pack. He hated crossbows. They were unwieldy, slow, and could be shot by any idiot who could point. Kyler fitted the special bolt in place, checked the silk spool, and braced his body against the side of the bridge. The bolt jerked to a stop, not 3 feet from the castle wall. The hooks on the bolt caught, and Kyler drew the rope taut, flush against the underside of the bridge. Kyler secured his end of the line and hid the crossbow. The next boat was still a good distance away. Kyler threw a leg over the line, approached the precipice that sloped off to the river, and slipped out into space. For a long time, he thought he was going to die as the silk rope drooped toward the river, but he held on, and the rope finally accepted his weight. He climbed across the chasm almost upside down, pulling himself with his hands, his legs crossed over the rope. Slowly, he reached the end of the rope. He flung himself from the rope to the piling and fell. He slapped all of his limbs around the iron sheathing, but its diameter was so great that his arms couldn't reach around it. Kyler clambered back up to the surface, and he held himself against the piling as the next boat passed. With the number of weapons he was wearing, he couldn't swim. But when he pushed himself off the piling, he sank close enough to shore that he was able to walk along the river bottom and pull himself out of the water before he drowned. Barely. He moved north along the same route he'd followed the night before. Kyler was glad Blint was dead. The wet boy would never have let him live this down. Blint would have had jibes for a decade.
Remember that time you tried to hump the bridge?
Kyler found a perch inside the boathouse and cleaned his weapons. He'd have to assume that all of his poisons had washed away for the second day in a row. He wrung out his clothes but didn't dare take the time to let them dry fully. Now that he was here, he wanted to get in and get out fast. He looked around the boathouse. It wasn't guarded. Evidently, the Caladorans thought their patrols were enough. 2 men guarded the long ramp down that led to the maw. They were tense, obviously uncomfortable with their assignment. Kyler didn't blame them. Between the stink and the occasional rumblings in the earth, he wouldn't have been comfortable either. Retribution slashed left and right, and the men died. He pulled their bodies into the brush and took the keys to the door. The entrance to the maw was designed to terrify the men and women incarcerated there. Kyler saw that the ramp down did indeed look like a tongue leading down a gigantic throat. Hooked teeth were carved out of the black volcanic glass around him, and torches were set behind the red glass to look like two flickering demonic eyes.
Nice.
Kyler glided down the tongue and turned down a hall toward the noble cells. From Durzo's friends, he'd gained a rough idea of the layout of the place, but he'd certainly never had any wish to visit. He found the cell he was looking for, checked the door for traps, and spent a moment waiting in the hallway, just listening. It was insane. He was afraid to open the door. He was more afraid to face Aline and Yuli than he was to sneak past witches and fight the Sakage. Gods. He was here to save Aline, and he was scared what she would say. Ridiculous. Or maybe what she wouldn't say. Just how she'd look at him. He'd given everything for her. But she didn't know that. All she could know was that she'd done nothing. And now she was in jail.
This is going to be fun.
Kyler picked the lock, released the Kakari's cloaking, and pulled down his black mask. The 10x10 cell was occupied by a pallet and a pretty little urchin sitting on Aline's lap. Kyler hardly noticed the little girl. His eyes were glued on Aline. She stared back at him, stunned. Her face was a mask, more literally than Kyler would have liked, since both of her eyes were blackened from when he'd hit her. She looked like a scarred raccoon.
Father!
Yuli squirmed out of Aline's lap. Still staring at Kyler, Aline barely noticed her go. Yuli threw her arms around Kyler and hugged.
Mother said you'd come. She swore you'd save us. Is she with you?
You must be Yuli. Your mother isn't with me, Yuli. But I am here to save you. Can you be very quiet?
Quiet as a mouse.
Hello, Aline.
Hello, whatever your name is.
His name's Durzo, but we can call him Zoe.
Aline glanced at Yuli, then back to him.
Is she yours?
Kyler shook his head.
You coming?
Aline scowled. He took it for a yes.
Follow me. Quiet as a mouse, right?
The pair followed as he walked, visible and nervous, to the ramp. Aline walked holding Yuli's hand and stopped as Kyler went ahead. When they got to the carvings of teeth, Aline pulled Yuli close. Kyler walked up the ramp and eased the door open a crack. The door shook as three arrows smacked into the wood.
Shit!
It had been too easy. Kyler should have known. He'd been counting on the chaos to throw everyone off. Locking the door again, Kyler snapped the key off in the lock. Let the bastards break it down.
Back up the tunnel! You won't see me, but I'll be there. I'll protect you. Just listen for my voice.
The black ooze of the Kakari bubbled out his pores. If Aline were startled to have him disappear before her eyes, she hid it well. She jogged, pulling Yuli along.
Do I need to run?
Just walk fast.
The gate that led underground to the castle was unguarded. Thank the gods for that. Maybe the chaos of taking over an entire country would help him. Maybe a patrol outside had just stumbled across the bodies. Kyler locked the gate and broke off the other key. They climbed a staircase slowly and emerged in a service hallway in the castle proper. From the hallway, they quickly came upon an intersection. Down one hall, off-duty Caladoran soldiers were slouching against a wall and sharing a joke. If Kyler killed them, whoever was in that room would sound an alarm. He could make it, but Aline and Yuli wouldn't. He went back to Aline.
Go when I say. Now!
Aline drew her shawl over her head and struggled across the hallway. Her back bent and her face down, one foot turned in and dragging along the floor. She looked like an old crone, and she blocked most of Yuli from view. It took her longer to get across the opening, but when one of the soldiers saw her, he didn't even say anything to the others. Kyler caught up with her as she resumed her normal fast stride.
Nice trick.
Where I grew up, stupid girls don't stay virgins.
You grew up on the east side. It's not exactly like the Warrens over there.
You think it's safer to work around oversexed nobles?
Where are we going?
They approached another intersection. The hallway they had been following led to the kitchens. The door to the right was locked, and the hall left was clear. Kyler pulled out his picks, risking the possibility of someone stepping out of the kitchens. He didn't like the idea of following the path of least resistance. The lock came open quickly, but something heavy had been wedged against the door on the other side. Probably a servant had done his best to block it during the coup. With his talent, he could kick through the door and whatever was blocking it, but the noise would bring whoever was in the kitchens, and Kyler felt a sense of urgency. He didn't want to leave the girls here while he scouted.
Left.
This corridor twisted and rose up several flights of steps. Kyler heard the jingling of mail and the slap of feet in hobnailed boots behind them.
Hurry.
The men behind them were moving at a slow jog, so they weren't chasing escaped prisoners, but just responding to orders. Kyler dropped back to the staircase and caught a brief glimpse of at least 20 men. He ran to catch up with Aline and Yuli. They were passing doors, and heedless of who might hear, Kyler started testing the latches. Everyone was locked.
Why are we going to the throne room?
Kyler stopped. Aline stared at Yuli, looking as surprised as he felt.
What?
Why are we going to the...
How do you know where we're going?
I live here. Mother's a maid. Our room's just...
Yuli, do you know a way out? A way that doesn't go to the throne room? Quick!
I'm not supposed to come up here. I'll get in trouble.
Damn it! Do you know a way out or not?
Yuli shook her head, frightened. That would have just been too easy, wouldn't it?
Great with children, aren't you?
Aline touched Yuli's cheek and squatted on her heels to look her in the face.
Have you come up here, Yuli? We won't be angry if you have, I promise.
But Yuli was too frightened to say anything. The footsteps were getting closer.
Move!
Kyler didn't like this. It was too tidy, too convenient that there was only one path.
One path? That's it! There's never just one path in this castle.
Kyler scanned the walls and ceilings as he ran. He didn't even try the doors that they passed. They turned another corner. Kyler skittered to a stop. He shimmered back into visibility.
Elise, do you see that third panel?
No, but what do I need to do?
Push on it. I'll lift you. There are secret corridors throughout the castle. Find your way out. Maybe Yuli can help you.
Aline nodded and Kyler squatted against the wall. Aline hitched up her skirts and stepped on his thigh. She scowled as she realized that climbing up on him would drape her skirts over his head, but she didn't hesitate to step up to his shoulders and finally into his hands. She walked her hands up a wall for balance. Then Kyler stood and extended his hands, lifting her high into the air. Aline pushed the panel open and slipped inside a crawl space. She had turned around by the time Kyler picked up Yuli.
Can you catch?
I'd better.
Aline was just able to pull the girl up with her.
Oh, I've been here.
Kyler took out a dagger and tossed it up to Aline.
What am I supposed to do with this?
Aside from the obvious?
Thanks. Now come on, there's room. Hurry.
Kyler didn't move. Dorian had spoken about this.
If you do the right thing twice, it will cost you your life.
Blint had said.
There are things more valuable than life.
The Count had said.
You can't pay for all you've done, but you aren't beyond redemption. There's always a way out. And if you're willing to make the sacrifice, the God will give you a chance to save something priceless.
Kyler looked at Aline. Something priceless indeed. He smiled at her. She looked at him like he was crazy.
Kyler, hurry!
It's a trap, Aline. If they lose me here, they'll search the hidden passages. I can't protect you in the crawl spaces. They're too cracked. Get out of the castle. Go to Jarl at the Blue Boar. He'll help you.
He'll kill you, Kyler. If it's a trap, you can't.
I did look. You've got great legs.
Kyler winked and disappeared. Wurdmeister Nefdada damned Roth Ursul for the 100th time of the day. Serving an Aethling of the God King was supposed to be an honor. Like all the God King's honors, this one came with strings attached. If an Aethling failed his Urdthum, his Wurdmeister was punished with him, and obedience was required, total obedience, except in things that might displease the God King, which was why Nef was cursing. He wasn't precisely disobeying Roth, but he was undoing something the prince had begun. Something, in fact, that Roth believed he had accomplished. Something that it was taking all of Nef's abilities to stop. Mercifully, Roth had been too busy securing the castle and the city to ask where his Wurdmeister was. Besides, he had 60 Meisters to command now. 3 of them Wurdmeisters almost as powerful as Nef. If Roth had sent men after him, the small servants' room Nef had commandeered was isolated enough that they had never been able to find him. His work, his petty deceit and rebellion, and gamble for the God King's favor, lay stretched out on the bed. She was a beautiful girl. Not that the God King needed another beautiful girl, but she had spirit. Fiery, intelligent, and best of all, a widowed virgin bride and a princess. Janine Geyer was a prize indeed. A prize to crown the God King's harem. A prize Neff had snatched from the very jaws of death. Every Vordmeister, as old as he was, knew volumes about preserving life, of course. It was in their own self-interest as they grew old.
But I am a genius. A genius.
His plan crystallized as Roth ranted, meaningless words exploding from the boy like diarrhea, as usual. His cut had been fortunate. Just one side of the neck, not so deep that it cut the windpipe. Neff let her bleed until she was losing strength, then tickled a little tendril of magic against her diaphragm to push the air from her lungs. Two more to close her eyes, a fourth to seal the wound on her neck, some quick movement to take attention away from her body so no one would notice that she was still breathing, and the girl had been his. He'd killed 7 serving girls looking for the right kind of blood for her. Sloppy work. He should have done better, but it had been enough. He'd decided to leave the scar. It gave the princess a certain something. And as a finishing touch, he'd found a girl in the city who looked like the princess and had her head mounted over the east gate with the rest of the royal families. If you got the right color of hair and styled it correctly, all you had to do was beat the face enough, and it could look like anyone's head. Still, he thought he'd done brilliant work, even if it had been exhausting. Tomorrow morning, the God King would arrive, and he'd dispense either favor or punishment to Roth Ursul. Either way, Neff would prosper. Something made him pause before he went out the door. Something felt odd outside. He walked to his window, threw open the wooden shutters, no glass for the servants' rooms, and stared through the hole into the ghastly Cenarian statue garden. The Meisters had set up their camp there, figuring it to be a center of power. Vordmeister Garol had always enjoyed thumbing his nose at the conquered country's gods and dead kings. It was pure play-acting not to take rooms in the castle, but when the Meisters went to war, Garol liked to show the God King that they were roughing it. Insufferable. A man climbed up onto one of the statues. Neff couldn't see his features clearly, but he certainly wasn't Caladorin. Sethi? What's a Sethi man with a sword doing climbing a statue in the middle of a war? A giant of a blacksmith with blonde hair stood below him, looking around anxiously. Neff shook his head. Vordmeister Garol wouldn't take such an insult lightly.
Witches of the false God King, hear me. Come to me. This day, on this rock, you will be shattered. Come and let your arrogance find its reward.
Had he not spoken heresy, the witches might have let Vordmeister Garol deal with him. But heresy would be stopped, must be stopped, instantly. Fully 30 Meisters drew on their beer. Neff's magical senses exploded. He lurched against the wall and collapsed. It felt like 1,000 demons were screaming in unison into each of his ears. Magic, like a bonfire, like a second sun, exploded through the castle. Neff felt his beard tingling, burning as magic washed toward him. He hadn't been holding his beard, and that was surely the only thing that saved him. The power pouring through the castle was more magic than he'd ever imagined, more magic than the God King himself could wield. Specks of magic leapt up to meet it. The Meisters, Neff could tell. The Meisters, who hadn't already been holding their beer, grabbed it. They might as well have been flies trying to extinguish a bonfire with the wind from their wings. The magic sought them out, wrapped around them, burned them to pillars of ash. He could feel the tendrils of their power snapping, bursting apart one by one. The conflagrations in the courtyard and in that odd Cenarian statue garden. Shouldn't have stayed here and lived? Did he dare go face that fire? What would this titan of a mage do if Neff dared to confront him? What would the God King do to him if he didn't? An odd, detached thought came to Kyler as he opened the last door and walked toward the throne room. That's why those guards outside the mall were nervous. They were bait.
Now I am, too.
His next thought was of Durzo's creed.
Life is empty.
It was a creed Durzo himself had betrayed, an empty creed. It neither saved life nor made it better. For a wet boy, it made life safer because it obliterated his conscience, or tried to. Durzo had tried to live that creed and had found himself too noble for it. Kyler wondered what had brought him to this. He was ready to die. Was it pride that he thought he could defy any odds? Was it duty to Durzo that he thought he had to pay back the debt of his life by saving Yuli? Was it revenge? That he hated Roth so much that he would die to kill him? Was it love?
Love? I'm a fool.
He felt something for Aline, it was true. Something intense and intoxicating and unreasonable. Maybe it was love. But what did he love? Aline? Or an image of her? Glimpsed from afar, pieced together with the glue of assumption. Maybe it was just some last vestige of romanticism that had brought him here, some sludge left over from the stories of princes and heroes Yolanda Drake had read to him. Maybe he'd spent too long with people who believed in false virtues like valor and self-sacrifice that Durzo had tried to teach him to despise. Maybe he'd been infected. But why he was here didn't really matter. This was the right thing to do. He was worthless. If his empty life could ransom Aline's life, then he would have accomplished something good. It would be the only thing he had ever done that he could be proud of. And if he gave Yuli a chance too, so much the better. He'd have his own chance too. His chance at Roth. Kyler had gone into other fights feeling confident, but this was different. As he stepped into the short hall to the throne room, Kyler felt at peace. The men who'd been standing in the room looking to the door adjusted their grips on their weapons.
A magical alarm to tell them I've arrived, then.
There were Highlanders, of course. He'd expected that. But he hadn't expected 30. And there were witches. He'd expected that, too. But not 5. The doors at the dead end where he'd lifted Aline and Yuli banged open and another 10 Highlanders poured in behind him. Taking a few quick steps, Kylan leapt into the throne room at the level of the floor, hoping to make it past the first attacks. The room was huge. The ivory and horn throne set above the seats of the assembly by 2 broad sets of 7 steps, separated by a flat landing. Roth sat in the throne, flanked by 2 witches. The others stood on the landing. The Highlanders were spread around the perimeter of the room. The leap took him past the whirring swords of 2 Highlanders who were cutting blindly at the air in front of the door, hoping to get lucky and hit the invisible wet boy. Drawing retribution from his back scabbard, Kylo rolled to his feet. A swarm of tiny hands appeared in the air as the witches chanted. The hands were looking for him, plucking at him. They seethed over the ground, leaping and clawing at each other as they groped for him. They jumped away, cutting at the hands, but his sword passed through them harmlessly. There was nothing for him to cut. They swarmed over him, and the hands thickened, strengthened. Then, as the hands pulled him upright, Kyla felt something else seize him. Like a baby caught in giant's fingers. It tore at him, and he felt the Kakari's cloaking strip open. He let it go. It wouldn't do him much good to be partly invisible if he couldn't move.
I knew you'd come, Blint.
Roth hopped to his feet and waved to the witches. Kylo was lifted off his feet and shot forward, carried magically up the stairs and deposited on the landing below the throne. The magic fingers tore away Kyler's mask.
Kyler?
My prince, beware. He has the Kakari.
Oh, just in time. Oh, Kyler, if I were another man, I'd almost let you live. Captain, where are the girl and the scarred winch?
We've lost them, Your Majesty.
Ooh, I'm disappointed, Captain. Unloose them.
Yes, Your Highness.
The soldier grabbed his 10 Highlanders and headed back into the hall.
Now, dessert. Kyla, do you know how long I've been looking for you?
Since I'm the man who's going to kill you, I'd guess, since you first looked in a mirror and realized just how damn ugly you are?
How droll. You know, Kyla, I feel like you've been in my shadow for years, opposing everything I've done. Stealing my Kakari really, really irritated me.
Well, I aim to vex.
And vex you do. You seem to turn up at the most inopportune moments.
Just like that rash you picked up from the rent boys, eh?
Oh, personality. Excellent. I haven't had a really satisfying kill since yesterday.
If you fell on your sword, we'd all be satisfied.
You had your chance to kill me, Kyla. You failed. But I didn't know you were a wet boy. I only got your real name yesterday. And killing you had to wait while I gained a kingdom for my father.
I won't hold it against you. I had my chance.
So gracious in defeat. Did Dezo teach you that? I must say, I've not been impressed with this generation of wet boys. Hugh's apprentice was as much of a disappointment as you are. I mean, really. Dezo would have at least killed one of my men before we caught him, don't you think? I'm afraid you're a poor shadow of your master, Kyla. By the way, where is he? It's not like him to have an inferior do a job that concerns him.
I killed him last night. For working for you.
I think that's the most lovely thing I've ever heard. He betrayed me by saving you, and you betrayed him for working for me. Oh, Kyla.
Roth came down the steps to stand in front of him.
If I could trust you damn wet boys, I'd hire you in a heartbeat. But you're too dangerous. And of course, you've bonded my Kakari.
Roth's witch shifted, obviously nervous to have Roth standing so close to Kyler.
The witch must know something I don't.
Kyler couldn't move a muscle. He was totally helpless.
Wait, that's it. That's exactly why he's nervous. He thinks the Kakari's a threat. And if he thinks it is, maybe it is.
Roth drew a beautiful long sword from a hip scabbard.
I'm disappointed with you.
Why's that?
Kyla racked his brain to think of how he might use the Kakari. What did he know about it? It enabled his talent. It made him see through shadows. It made him invisible. It came out of his skin and hid him more perfectly than any wet boy could hide.
But how?
I'd hoped this would be fun. I was going to tell you how hard you made my life. But you're like Blint. You don't even care if you live or die.
Sure I do. How hard have I made your life?
Sorry. I'm not going to give you the satisfaction.
Oh, come on. Not for me. You know, your father's meisters and soldiers are going to report everything they've seen and heard to him. Why not give them the whole story?
It was clumsy, but with his life on the line, it was harder to think quickly than he would have imagined. Roth paused, thinking. It was useless. The Kakari just did what it did. It had eaten a knife last night, for the gods' sake. There was no telling by what logic it operated, if any. It was just magic.
Absorbs. Eats. That's what it does. The devourer.
Sorry, I didn't perform for anyone. Not even you. This is just between us, Azoth.
Roth handed his sword to the witch to his left and smoothed his long black hair over his ears. Except, he didn't have ears. The left ear looked like it had been melted off. The right ear had been cut off.